Malaysia and China are also credited with helping secure the ceasefire. Next, Israel-Iran. Trump's claim comes down to dropping bunker-busting bombs to prevent a nuclear war. The evidence does not support the view that Iran was on the verge of producing a nuclear weapon. The U.S. launched attacks on Iran's nuclear sites in support of Israeli policy, which has long wanted a green light from Washington to eliminate Iran's nuclear capability. Bombing to obliterate, remember Trump's word, obliterate Iran's military potential amounts to war-making, not a peace initiative. The current ceasefire is most likely merely a respite as both sides recover. So on the evidence, Trump has a very weak case for a peace award. In only one conflict, Armenia-Azerbaijan, can he be said to have played a central role, and even then for personal gain as much as for peace. In all the other conflicts, fighting and disputing only halted temporarily. But the most glaring contradictions to Trump's claim are the Russia, Ukraine, and Israel-Hamas wars. In both, Trump has touted his peacemaking role, but has failed to use U.S. influence to force the central war-making leaders, Putin and Netanyahu, to accept a ceasefire and join peace talks. At every turn in those conflicts, Trump has ignored the human and economic costs of aggressive war, refused to sanction Russia and Israel for their barbaric behavior, accepted their claims to illegally occupied land, and curried favor with their authoritarian leaders. My conclusion? Only in a world turned upside down could Donald Trump be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, or for that matter, any prize that recognizes human decency and peace building. I'm Mel Gertal for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Hannah Francis, and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and Suzanne Potter. The director of Evening News is the wonderful Althea Billings, back from sabbatical. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
You're listening to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. So I just got back from an amazing backpacking trip in the wilderness of Wyoming, and I've been reflecting on how nature, wilderness, sacred lands, or whatever you want to call them, these places have always been a source of refuge, spiritual rejuvenation, and healing for humans. But a question I and so many others are grappling with right now is, how do we continue to find inspiration and healing in a world that is being so deeply harmed, where these places are disappearing? So my guest today is author, travel writer, and speaker Adam Sawyer. Adam is leading a series of facilitated discussions around grieving in nature and addiction recovery in nature. Adam talks and writes openly and beautifully about how nature helped him heal on his journey through addiction and grieving. And I'm really thankful to be able to share this conversation with you all, and I think it has a lot of resonance with those of us in the climate and environmental justice and conservation communities. I love hearing feedback, guest ideas, or you can just drop me a line and say hello at coastrangeradio@gmail.com, or check us out on the Coast Range Radio Instagram feed. Okay, let's get to the interview. Adam Sawyer, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I've been really enjoying getting into your writing and learning more about your story. I hope we'll get into all of that and more today, but I'd like you to start us off, if you don't mind, with a reading from one of your blog posts.
Absolutely. This is from my Substack, which is called Collecting Sunsets. And this particular essay, and if folks visit at home, there are some photos that would be helpful for the topic of it, but it's called Inosculation. And it's kind of about me discovering this process in trees. And again, we'll get into it, but one of the wonderful things about spending time in the forest, inosculation. Because it's so emblematic of an Oregon coastal forest, I've become increasingly more fascinated by and familiar with the Sitka spruce. And thanks to casual but extensive reading and observation, I've discovered a number of interesting things about the coniferous evergreen. I suppose the leading bullet point is just how big they are. The Sitka is by far the largest spruce species on Earth and the fifth largest conifer in the world. But there's something that this and some other tree species do that is far more fascinating to me than physical enormity. Due to the fact that it tends to grow in wet and poorly drained soil, the Sitka spruce has a shallow root system with long lateral roots and few branchings. So these trees rely heavily on each other through a process called inosculation. Inosculation is a natural phenomenon in which trunks, branches, or roots of trees intertwine, grow together, and form a fused, permanent bond. Inosculated roots share nutrients, making all the trees involved more vigorous and occasionally provide life support for weakened or damaged trees. The term derives from the Latin roots in plus osculare, meaning to kiss inward, which could somehow be the sexiest and most emotionally healthy ecological utterance of all time. It's not an extremely rare occurrence, but it's not especially common either. It also typically occurs between trees of the same species, but the Sitka spruce is known to inosculate with all of its neighbors, including the western hemlock and western red cedar. And if all that wasn't enough to send you into metaphor extraction mode, there's more. Because in addition to the purposeful grafting of roots, there's another type of incidental inosculation referred to as wounding, which occurs when the trunks or branches of adjacent trees rub together. The abutting trunks or limbs sometimes rest on, rub, or grow against each other for years, inflicting a set of paired wounds. In response to the injury, the trees produce a callus or scar tissue. The trunks on both trees continue to grow, fuse, and heal, eventually allowing them to hold against the wind as one. So not only do these trees intertwine their roots, enabling them to stand sturdier and prosper, but when damage occurs between them, they heal from their traumas together, becoming bonded and stronger for it. Inosculation might be the technical term, but it sounds an awful lot like beautiful, selfless, and encompassing kind of love to me. I don't think there's a single being on Earth that wouldn't benefit from an inward kiss.
Thank you so much for that. That was beautiful. And
thanks, man.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite pieces of writing that I've read of yours. So before we move on, could you tell me a little bit more about your blog, Collecting Sunsets?
Yeah, so Collecting Sunsets, it kind of began as more or less, and I didn't really know this term at the time, but like grief journaling, because I was going into nature quite a bit, and we'll you know, dive into the sources of that grief and the need for healing, but writing about grieving and healing in nature. And over time, those essays have kind of morphed into life stories and stories about love and loss, but a lot of it has to do with nature and perspectives found in nature. And then also photo essays detailing some of my favorite aspects of nature. So it's been a great way for me to kind of heal and process, but also express art and connect with others. So it's been great.
All that really comes through in that Substack. And actually, I think that leads us nicely into the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project. Because, you know, as you've alluded to already, you have had some kind of life, Adam. You know, you've gone through some really profound life changes, really profound loss and challenge. And well, first of all, as we're going to get into it, I'm sure, as much as you want to, but I want to thank you in advance for just the honesty that you bring to these subjects of loss and grief. And that cannot be easy for
you.
Well,
thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It's been wonderfully revealing and healing, not just for myself, but for everyone. And I've kind of discovered through a lot of recent events that there is a lot of strength in vulnerability, and that was a lesson I've recently learned. So I'm happy to hear that. So thanks for that.
Yeah, of course. Well, let's talk about that Oregon Humanities Conversation Project and what got you involved in that. So first, could you tell me a little bit about the project and how you got connected? What drew you to be a part of it?
Yeah, so initially I was giving presentations in libraries probably a couple years ago. I had put together some of the essays, those Substack essays, and turned it into kind of a 1 hour, more or less just me reading essays and showing photos kind of presentation about healing and grieving in nature. And someone had mentioned the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project and that this might be a great topic for that. So I reached out to them and kind of did some research and discovered what the project is. And from a high level overview, it's a project that brings people together to talk about beliefs and experiences around timely and important issues through what's called reflective conversations. So instead of me just reading essays to people and showing them photos, we have more of a framed but open-ended dialogue about ideas. And we're not really trying to come to consensus or necessarily find solutions or debate ideas. Luckily, my topics are not necessarily hot button topics, so there's not really much debate to be had, but really to learn from listening and from conversing with each other. And so Oregon Humanities and I worked together to develop two different conversations that I facilitate for them. And the first is addiction and regeneration. And so one of the episodes that you'd alluded to in the it's been a life that's I've undergone, or that we all endeavor. I had quite a battle with opiate addiction throughout my life. It first reared its head in the military through prescription medications. They actually called it GI aspirin back then, because they would prescribe opiates for pretty much anything. And it happened slowly and took a long time, but I got heavily addicted, and to the point where it actually ended my military career. And so I got out of the military, got clean, got out of the military, and managed to live 10 years without any sort of interference from opiates. But fast forward to 10 years later, I had a burgeoning outdoor and travel writing career that was beginning to flourish. And lo and behold, I ran into opiates casually in the form of heroin.
Casually,
nothing,
yeah, sure.
Nothing super casual.
As we all do.
As one does. I had a friend that had offered it, and I was initially very upset and kind of angered at the offer. But then about a half hour later, I was kind of tracking them down and wound up smoking heroin off tinfoil in a pizzeria bathroom. And so not to be too graphic or anything for the radio, but long story short, 2 year dalliance led to a full-on tailspin and full-on addiction. And it was the outdoors of the Pacific Northwest that got me out of a career in IT in the first place. I really wanted, life chapters being what they are, I was at a point in my life where I just wanted to make a living outside. I was so inspired by this place and this region that I quit IT to make a living outside. Didn't know what that would be. I thought maybe trail maintenance, forest service, something along those lines. But I wound up utilizing nature heavily as my primary source of recovering from that addiction, to getting physically stronger again, emotionally recovering, spending enough time with my own thoughts and nature to kind of get on the other side of that, or make it through that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so that was, they wanted one conversation for that. And then the second conversation, which is the other part of my story in the most recent chapter, this conversation is called Grieving in Nature. Let me go back and detail exactly what the addiction and regeneration in nature conversation entails.
Yeah, of course.
So that conversation, in that conversation, we explore regeneration in nature and cycles and what nature can teach us about healing ourselves, how nature heals itself, and what are the correlations, if any, between regeneration in nature and then, so to speak, regeneration in our own lives. You know, how does a forest recover after a fire? How do we recover our lives after, you know, a similar decimation from addiction? And so that conversation is all about nature cycles, our own cycles, parallels between nature and ourselves. And that's what a lot of my writing and photography and all of what I do is kind of based around or in is looking at, maybe not necessarily looking for answers in nature, but perspectives. Mm-hmm. Perspectives are out there in droves if we're open to them and looking for them and seeking them out. So the next conversation that they wanted or that I developed with them was called Grieving in Nature. And so three and a half years ago now, and this is where we take a bit of a sad turn. So apologies in advance, yeah, to anyone who might be listening over a morning coffee at some point. But I was, my life partner and I, we had moved from Portland off the grid nearish to Mount Rainier. And we had been living there for almost 4 years. And I was still doing some travel writing for a living. And I was away on assignment and there was a house fire. And unfortunately, it was so fast and so intense that my partner, Kara, was unable to escape the fire. Neither did our cat. Lost her, the cat, the home, and most of what was in it in that fire. And so I fell back on nature again. And, you know, silver linings being what they are, I was in a situation where, you know, I don't have any children or dependents, and I didn't have an office that I needed to go back to. But I did have a friend who lived down here on the coast that, as luck would have it, I met writing a story about 25-mile-an-hour zones on the Oregon coast. And she allowed me to live in her historic hotel, the old Wheeler Hotel, by the way. Always try and give a shout out to that place anytime I can. And she allowed me to live there in one of those historic rooms until I was able to find my way again or find my way forward. So I was able to spend, I say it was turbo grieving, essentially a year and a half. I would go out to the beach, up into the woods, up into the forest, up into the mountains every day, and be out there for as long as I needed to. And, you know, go through everything, laugh, cry, think, grieve, process, all those things. And again, that's where I started observing those perspectives that nature has to teach. And then I would come home and write about it. And so the grieving in nature conversation is really about all of that. What are the emotional benefits of spending time outdoors and how it allows us to grieve and process loss? And so that's kind of a, you know, where the deeper connection with nature and outdoors provides us with additional value and perspective. And so that's what that conversation is based around.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Adam. And I mean, both of those topics are so heavy and so profound. And you've made, I'm sure, the absolute most that you can out of such a tragedy. But, you know, nothing can make up fully for that loss. So I just want to make sure that I say that I'm so sorry for those losses.
I appreciate that. I really do. I appreciate it a lot.
I'm sure you hear it all the time. But, you know, one of the things that, and maybe we'll put a pin in this, but one of the reasons that I was really looking forward to talking with you is both of these presentations, I think, or discussion series, I think have really interesting intersections with the climate and conservation activism world and mm-hmm. and things that we would do well to be grappling with. I'd like to explore that with you a little bit more, but first I want to hold on the conversation project and ask you about how folks can learn more and bring your talks to their communities. Like, where are you giving these talks? How do people get in touch with you about that?
Sure. So if you go to OregonHumanities.org and go to, there's a whole section for the Conversation Project. And within that, there are links that give you the whole catalog. And there's a wide array to include some climate topics that you can request a facilitator to come to your community or come speak to your group. And essentially just kind of, you know, you can go to that catalog, find a topic and a facilitator that interests you or pertinent, and you can just request them to come have that conversation. And we'll go, and you know, we time it. You know, the Oregon Humanities will reach out to me. We'll get together, we'll come up with the logistics, when works best for everybody. And Oregon Humanities will kind of be the conduit to getting this thing to transpire. And more often than not, they're able to help with the logistics, like the lodging and getting me down there and those sorts of things. So just go to OregonHumanities.org and go to the Conversation Project, and it'll kind of, the flow will reveal itself to you.
Well, great. And, you know, coming into this conversation, the grieving in nature piece and your thoughts on that is something I really wanted to ask you about. But in the way you were describing the natural regeneration and addiction presentation, that also brought up a couple of things for me. And so I just wanted to ask about, you know, you mentioned things like a forest recovering from a fire, which is like a natural disturbance and natural regeneration potentially. But, you know, my experience of addiction, which is not yours or not anyone else's experience, but, you know, is that I've yet to meet a person who becomes addicted to something to the point where it's affecting their life that doesn't have, you know, trauma in their life inflicted from the outside. And I think about, you know, hopefully this isn't too strained of a parallel, but like, you know, a clear cutting of a tree plantation or a clear cutting of a forest into a tree plantation, and sort of the parallels of how do we regenerate out of those, not natural disturbances, but these external harms.
Right, right. No, I think that's a very distinct and clear parallel, actually.
Yeah. And I don't know if you have anything to say on that. That's just something that came up for me while you were talking.
Yeah. And that's, you know what, that's almost embarrassingly, I guess that's one that hadn't necessarily occurred to me. And this to me is the value of the Conversation Project.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I'm there to facilitate, but truly it's about shared experience and perspective and learning. And so while my perspective was slightly, you know, the thing that locked it in for me, and it wound up becoming an essay called Death and Rebirth on Vista Ridge, was going up after a wildfire and seeing carpets of avalanche lilies growing again a handful of years after the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And how that landscape is never going to be the same that it was, but there can be and will be beauty in the regrowth. And so that sent me on a whole, you know, down the rabbit hole of regeneration and nature and all those sorts of things. But to your point, it hadn't even dawned on me before that truly addiction is much more like a clear-cut forest, and that more of a human inflicted harm or a trauma, you know, that addiction is often born from. So that's a topic we could spend, I think, countless hours exploring. So yeah. but I mean, you did a good job there of kind of demonstrating why having these in-person conversations are so beneficial, because that's going to get me to thinking along a different lines or a different train of thought than I'd considered before even.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for indulging me in that.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I don't
thanks
have
for the fresh perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I always have to bring it back to clear cutting. So
there we go.
Okay. Like I said, you know, the talk that, or I shouldn't say the talk, the presentation discussion that you're leading on grieving in nature, that was the first thing that kind of drew me in, because I do think that, you know, getting out into the natural world can be so healing just in and of itself. But I think as somebody who's done a lot of climate and conservation activism, and I think a lot of our listener base are activists and involved, I think a lot of us are grieving for nature too, you know, right? As we enter into this deepening spiral of the climate crisis, the extinction crisis. And I'm wondering if you have kind of thoughts on how those relate, the grieving in nature, the grieving for nature, you know, how you think about that as someone who's thought deeply about these things.
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's almost like that movie Inception in a way, with Leonardo DiCaprio, where the thing or the tool that I have utilized most to grieve, we're also kind of simultaneously grieving its change and its loss to some degree, right? Mm-hmm, so, which makes for a very interesting thing to ponder, or a dichotomy to have, is the thing that helped me with my grief. I'm simultaneously kind of grieving its loss in a way.
Yeah.
And what that has, I guess the perspective that has shown me, or the thing I take away from that is, you know, obviously to continue to fight the good fight and do the work necessary for conservation and to combat the climate crisis. But it also has given me a wonderful kind of perspective of be present and be of gratitude, and to be thankful for nature and the natural world as it exists in that moment when I'm in it, as it exists today.
Yeah.
Because it might not be, will not be that same way tomorrow, a year from now, a lifetime from now, the next generation, what have you. And so, you know, that's something I've obviously learned tangibly, is that tomorrow is not guaranteed. And we have no idea what the future holds. And so it gives me this, like I said, a sense of gratitude, and it reminds me to be present and to be thankful for the natural world as it currently exists when I'm out in it, and for that moment, and for that duration of time, because it won't be that way truly ever again. It'll be different tomorrow, or the next time I visit it, and the next year I come back. So presence and gratitude is what I've been focusing on as far as that goes.
I really appreciate that perspective and your take on that. Before I let you go, I wanted to see if there's any other pieces of your writing, any of your work that you want to highlight.
Absolutely. It's easy to find me if you go to adamsawyer.com. That's just kind of like the nexus of it all. Mm-hmm. The Substack is called Collecting Sunsets. And for what it's worth, and I know that there are some misgivings with the company Airbnb, but they recruited me, or asked me if I wanted to give an experience. I guess they have experiences now. And so I give the Cape Mears experience with guidebook author Adam Sawyer, which you can book on the Airbnb site. And it's a guided hike. We talk about the benefits of old growth forest, what old growth forest means. We talk about the ecology and the history of the Oregon coast from socially as well as naturally. And it's a wonderful thing, actually. And so people can go and book that if they would like to take a guided tour with me.
Yeah.
And talk about old growth forests.
On it, I've never done, you know, one of those Airbnb experiences, but that honestly sounds fascinating, Adam.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, honestly. And to be able to give some of the history of the native people of this area and the bounty of the region, and to really be able to take people into a parcel of old growth forest and discuss why it's important scientifically, but also from like a more human standpoint. Mm-hmm. And to be allowed to do that without any interference has been wonderful. And so it's really just starting to gain momentum now. So I'm looking forward to doing more of those.
Well, I could keep talking to you, Adam, for a long time, but I know that you've got presentations to lead, nature walks to lead. So I wonder if you wouldn't mind giving us one last reading from one of your essays or a poem.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, this is a short poem I wrote earlier this year during another particularly troubling time. And this is called Where Spruces Sing. My head is a troubled place sometimes, where ghosts and memories can inflict a lingering sting, and society's constant clamor and cruelty often cause my ears to ring. My eyes fail to find the horizon, and my tongue tastes and tells of unsavory things. The soul grows weary in these spells, craving longingly for its winter's relent to spring. I'll go to my places of solace and study the drooping boughs to which mosses cling, and with a quieter spirit, feel mother's love and hear the sick of spruces sing. Comfort, if not closure, inevitably finds my mind, and merciful balance it will bring. Without fail, mother reveals and provides all I need, though in her timeless sapience, never everything. There you go.
Thank you so much for that. That was beautiful.
And thanks, man.
And thank you so much for this conversation. It was really heartening. We're all going through it right now to one degree or another. And so hearing the perspective of someone like you who's really gone through it on a deeper level than I think a lot of us ever will, I really just appreciate that. I appreciate your work and the openness of your writing. So thank you so much for being with us on Coast Range Radio, Adam Sawyer.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was really an honor being here, and thanks for taking the time, and thank you for the work that you're doing and continue to do. It's been great.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is an independent production. If you like the show, please...
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements